we are the ones that are going to transform the world. It doesn't matter whether you're a plant or a human being, we are the ones that bring forth life, so we have a viable role to play. And just like the issue of race, there have been some women who have put themselves in the victim mode. I remember talking to one of my mentors, a white South African woman who was instrumental in their post-apartheid movement. And I remember saying to her, I don't want to share my voice because I don't want to be labeled identity as the angry black woman. And she said to me, but why not? She says, you're angry, you're black, and you're female.
This is Leah Steele. Welcome to the Wealth Witch podcast. Just a few years ago, I experienced complete financial collapse. We lost a business, our home, and a car. My husband was selling plasma to pay for diapers and formula. I was living a life I hated, and I was miserable. It was the lowest part of my life. It ended up being my biggest blessing. Just a few short years later, I've designed the life of my dreams. I live a life of luxury in beautiful Bali, Indonesia, travel the world, and spend my days helping others manifest wealth and abundance. Living a purpose-led life changed everything for me. This podcast is about my journey, my top tips and tools for manifestation, and interviews with all the amazing, world-changing, inspiring people I meet along the way. Welcome to my world.
Hey, hey, and welcome to another episode of the Wealth Witch podcast. I am your host, Leah Steele, and today I am joined by the beautiful Nadine McNeil, the Universal Empress. Nadine is a personal development coach, wisdom mentor, and yoga teacher based here in beautiful Bali. She's actually up in Ubud and not too far from me. But we don't get to see each other as much as we would like, I think, because here in Bali, we sort of nestle into our own little areas and we don't tend to branch out that much. So Nadine, we definitely need to work on that, getting to actually see each other face to face more. But welcome. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy that you are here. I would love for you to just share a little bit more about who you are. We're going to be having this incredible conversation today about identity and race and leadership. So I would love for you to just share a little bit about who you are, your history, where you're from. I know that you've lived all over the world. You've had these incredible life experiences, but tell us a little bit about who you are.
Well, firstly, thank you so much, Leah, for having me here. Even though, as you rightfully say, we don't get to see each other as often as we would like, from the minute we met, it was like, boom, you know, meeting a fellow lioness and just really connecting at so many levels. So I'm super thrilled to be here. I am from Jamaica, Jamaican by birth, universal in outlook. I've been blessed to live all over the world, the United States, the Middle East, Africa, Haiti, here in Southeast Asia, Europe. And all of this globe-trotting was as a result of my former life when I worked with the United Nations for 22 years, mainly in the fields of emergency response and logistics. Like many of us listening on this program, there was a point at which I hit burnout, as it were, and I suppose it was at that point that yoga found me, or I found yoga. I had always had a fitness background. I was always a gym buff. I used to, you know, run half marathons, etc. So yoga was a natural and organic transition for me, the physical part. The real game changer for me, as far as the yoga was concerned, was that as I started to shift from the inside out, I recognized, A, who I was, that I had spent all of this time living a life according to the ideals of others. And so really reconnecting to my passion and my purpose, which led to me eventually leaving the UN system in 2012, returning to Jamaica, where I did a fair bit of volunteer and service work in orphanages and prisons, etc., with the yoga. And I'd always been traveling back and forth to Bali. I worked for UNICEF in Indonesia following the 2004 tsunami, where I headed up the emergency and response and logistics area or section. that allowed me to travel all over Indonesia. However, Bali was the place I always came to for R&R. And anyone that knows anything about Bali, prior to this pandemic, this was sort of the spiritual mecca for the Western world. So all of the best teachers rolled through here. I was a key part, I am a key part of the Bali Spirit Festival. And so when I had the opportunity to relocate here or settle here full time in 2015, it was an immediate yes. So up until this year, I'd spent about 9 months of the year here in Bali and then traveling, teaching in the US, Jamaica, and elsewhere. This was the year that I was supposed to blow up and be on just about every major conference and festival that you can think of. I'm super blessed that I was able to teach on the South Africa Spirit Festival, return to Bali on the 10th of March, and life changed on the 12th. So that's who I am in a nutshell. I'm also a writer, former writer with Elephant Journal. I've written for Medium, transformational speaker, and just, you know, my intention is to be a catalyst for change through my own change, inspiring others to step into the fullest expression of themselves.
Amazing. I'm so happy to have you here. So this conversation that we're going to be having today actually stemmed from the conversation that we had the first day that we met. And like you said, a dear friend of both of ours had been attempting to connect us for several months. And both of our schedules had kind of prohibited us from connecting. And then you finally walked into my house one afternoon, and it literally was like meeting this long lost member of your soul family. I mean, we just immediately hit it off and then dove into this couple of hour conversation about topics that are quite controversial that most people don't talk about the first time that they meet each other. And I mean, and we had conversations about everything from skin color to Black Lives Matter to this pandemic. And we reflected at the end of that conversation on how most people wouldn't be able to have this conversation. And I said, we've got to do this again on my podcast. So that's why we're here. I'd love to hear a little reflection from you on that initial conversation that we had, just your thoughts on meeting each other under those circumstances and then really being able to dive into that type of a dialogue and a conversation.
Well, one of the things I'll say first and foremost is that I always know that something greater than me is going to occur when there's like this static, like there's this energy where, you know, it's almost seismic, not wanting to call an earthquake in, but for us to align our schedules and get it together. And then once we actually met, I remember when you came down the stairs, I was struck by the presence of your eyes. You looked me straight in the eyes. There was no BS, and we immediately dropped into our exchange. And what I loved about that was it was almost like we were reflecting each other, as it were. We very quickly established that we were both Leos, which was like, ah, now I get what this energetic frequency is about. And this is one of the beauties I love when women meet in 2020, women who are about embodying the fullness of their feminine selves. We spoke about hormone issues. We spoke about physical issues. We spoke about the impact of Healy and how this had transformed your life. And I don't remember what the exact point was that I made or you made with regards to Black Lives Matter, but what we both came to was, hang on a minute, this is something that could go radically wrong, and that there's a role that as people of color, there's some self-responsibility that is required here as opposed to constantly diving into this victim mode. And so that kind of opened up the conversation. And you're right, there are not many places that allow me to say that. I was on a call earlier on today, And I have spent most of my life living in environments where most of the people didn't look like me. Not only didn't they look like me, I was in a predominantly white male dominated job where I had to show up and show up in a big way because people's lives depended on it. So, you know, my mission has always been about transcending that stereotype, as it were. So the fact that you saw me and felt me and we both kind of almost went, ah, finally, was just really opening. And then we just let it rip and it was really beautiful.
So I think it's so interesting. You keep coming back to this Leo thing because you said it that day as well. And I'm actually not a Leo. I'm a Sagittarius with a Virgo rising.
But that's it. It's the fire.
Yes. Yeah, it's the fire. But so we actually had, because you said, are you a Leo that day? And I was like, no, I'm a Sagittarius. But the other interesting thing is that I do have a lot of Lyran starseed energy. So I get mistaken for a Leo a lot because I've got that lion starseed energy that's quite powerful. So I'll take it, definitely. But yeah, I think that we both were able to really say a lot of things that we weren't able to say to a lot of people. And we delved into so many different topics from me growing up in a primarily white neighborhood school, being raised by white parents and essentially passing for a lot of my life to Black Lives Matter. And I think that this was right on the heels of the Tuesday blackout, which is why I think it came up. And so we were talking about that. So I want to just dive into this conversation again, because first of all, I know it's very important. And I continue to see Black people, and I actually really want to have a conversation with you about these labels of color actually today as well. But I continue to see Black people give their power away and hold on so tightly to their victim stories. And I think everyone can agree that in America, it's ripping the country apart. There is nothing positive that I see coming for Black Americans from the current state and current reality of how they are taking on the labels. I mean, it's just that it's the victim identity, essentially. So I'd love to hear from you on that. But I do want to talk about this before we even jump into that, because as of late, I've really been struggling with these labels of Black Americans, Black people, colored people. So talk to me a little bit about what you think about that. And do you feel that calling ourselves Black Americans, you're not American, obviously, but Black Americans, Black people, are we creating limitations and separation even in that?
Wow. So it's this question. As the former representative of the NAACP, I don't recall her name at the moment, when asked, is she African American? And she kept responding, I identify as Black. So what does identification mean? I think there's the aspect of looking at the syntax of the words that we use to describe ourselves. Somehow, we're searching for a context or a pivoting ground from which we can move. I personally do not like the term people of color or women of color, or it's euphemism. It's trying to pretty up something. I'm a Black woman. I'm a Black woman and I'm from Jamaica and I'm of African descent. Now, what we're starting to look at, as you have alluded to in your question, is we now start to look at stereotypes, biases, and straight up racism, you know? So when we say we identify as Black, what does that mean? For me, that means I'm of African descent. My ancestors came from Africa somewhere. I'm not even going to try and pinpoint that. What is the bias of that? Coming from an island like Jamaica, there are certain suppositions that are made. I'm probably loudmouthed and aggressive. I probably love reggae music. I'm probably a great dancer. The racism of that is all Black people with dreadlocks smoke ganja, straight up. Yeah? So those are sort of the syntaxes and the nuances that one is constantly defying. I go to travel, I try to check in on business class. The woman says to me, am I sure I'm in the right place? I say to her, are you sure you're asking me the right question? So we know all of that. Now, in terms of what is happening, and I think the American issue is the one that's most pronounced for us in terms of the victimhood. I agree with you. We don't do ourselves any service when we continue to identify with labels that have been slapped upon us. But for us to remove those labels, Leah, we got to do some work. We have to do some work. We have to take responsibility for ourselves. One of the things I spoke about earlier on today that nobody dares touch is, you know, the religiosity and the role that that has played. Now, I certainly have a very, very powerful relationship with the God of my understanding, but we've taken on this business of being a sinner, the role that Christianity played in the slave trade. There's a whole pile of shit that's running around that. And so depending on your level of consciousness, that's how you're going to respond to that. If you have been born and raised in the projects where you don't know one step above where the projects is, your reality is like, shit's going to go down. I'm going to burn that XYZ and see what I can get, because we become products of our environment. If I say a similar thing in Jamaica, I remember working in inner city communities in Jamaica, and, you know, the women would say to me, you know, love does not exist in the ghetto, because in the ghetto, I'm trying to feed my next child. And if that means I'm going to use my PUSSY to do that, I'm going to do that. You understand? So there are some really confronting things that we have to look at. And as you and I spoke about that day, Black Lives Matter and this movement will not do what it is meant to do and what it has the power to do unless we put our money where our mouth is. It is as simple as that. And this is why the money piece is such an important conversation in the dialogue about transcending and transforming this, particularly for us, for me as a Black woman and a transformational leader. I gotta have that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Black Lives Matter movement, for example, if we simply want to talk about the financial conversation around Black Lives Matter, the money of Black Lives Matter is not going back into the projects. It's not going into helping and elevating the people. It's going to fund campaigns of white politicians that are supposed to be elevating the people and helping the people. You know, and again, this is not a popular conversation, and I fully expect some backlash to come from this podcast. But the truth is that the financial conversation has to be had. It's exactly what you're saying. Every dollar that we spend, regardless of the currency, right? Every dollar that we spend, that dollar, the reason that we have the ability to spend that dollar is because the global economy was built on the slave trade of all types of people, all creeds, all colors, but particularly in America, on the backs of brown and black bodies. And so we have to begin to have that conversation, but we have to have that conversation not from a place of victimhood and not from a place of, well, now we need reparations, but from a place of knowledge and wisdom about how we got to where we are and where we came from, and now making a choice and a decision that we are going to shift our consciousness and move into a place of empowerment and supporting our people. So one of the things that you and I talked about is, you know, we were having the conversation of like, where are the Martin Luther Kings and Malcolm X's of our time and of our generation? And we talked about the problem of Black celebrity and that people are not putting money back into their communities because they're trying to get out.
Word. And so a lot of that is, again, the conditioning. As a people, we have not been conditioned. We have not been programmed as it were, to trust each other. And there's a very, very logical reason for that. If we trusted each other and had each other's backs, the slave trade could not have existed. It is as simple as that. You had to make me lesser than so that you could power over and carry out what it is that you had to carry out. You and I spoke about this. When you look at the fact that the African slave was considered 3/8 or whatever the percentile is human, that is still running in our DNA, whether we like it or not. And that's something that we have to look at. So what do we do? I've done it because that was the way I was raised. The first car I bought was a BMW convertible. I had to do all of the trappings. And then guess what? I realized the trappings didn't mean jack. Because what was important to me was what was happening here. So I had to go in and do the deep inner work for that consciousness to rise. You know, and as I often say, having worked and lived in Africa, that's a whole nother story. I had colleagues who would think that I was more accepted in Africa by my colleagues because we shared a skin color. In fact, I probably had a harder time because I'm a reflection of what they are not, you know? So there's this resentment. Who does this uppity black child think she is just because she went to X, Y, and Z and she works for the UN and now she's gonna roll in here? Believe me, yeah? So what would then happen is, and this is one of the things that gets me out of bed in the morning that I often say, is that I have a responsibility to give back. You know, the weight of my blessings behooves me. I remember returning to Jamaica in 2012 and going to the maximum security prison to teach yoga. And my father was driving me somewhere and he said to me, "Why do you want to do this?" And I said, "Well, why do I not?" "No, what do? We give back in the church. Because the church is a decent, respectable place where we're supposed to give back. But what happens to everyone else?" You know, and I remember going into that prison, all men's prison, and I'm not going to take away whatever from the prisoners that were there, but I was seen and dealt with in a way that blew my mind. "Madam, you want a chair to sit down on? Madam, this three..." But it was like extraordinary, you know? So as you are talking about how do we give back, we have a responsibility to give back. But you see, it's such a complex thing that no one wants to talk about, because we also know that whoever it is, has worked so hard to get away from that story that the last thing you want to do is look back down there from whence you came. And it does happen that you try to pull someone from down there and that same person screws you. So that's also running in the trajectory. You know, one of the things that you and I spoke of, there's nothing I would want to do more than serve my community in terms of my coaching work, my client work. 90% of my client base are white women. 90%. I would even say 95%.
Yeah. And what's the solution? So I guess, you know, it's very difficult to help and to be of service to our people because they are not receptive to the help.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest issues and problems that I see. And it has to do with that victim mentality and looking down on anyone who has gotten out and not being willing to receive from the people that have gotten out or who have had better lives. You know, again, it's programming and conditioning, and we have been programmed and conditioned to not trust each other and to remain divided, because as long as we remain divided, we're easy to control. But I just, you know, I cannot understand why more people don't see this and why we just continue to buy into the bullshit and the stories and the division. And yeah.
I really think that part of it is a lack of consciousness. And I think the other part of it is that you would actually have to do something. I often share this story. One of my first cases of overt prejudice came from an African-American woman in New York. I was living in New York. It was in the early 80s. I was on the subway, whatever happened. And, you know, she turned around and she says, bitch, why don't you get back on your banana boat and go back where you came from? I was stunned. I was stunned, you know, and I often say in my next life, I'm coming back again as a Jamaican, because having left Jamaica at 16 years old, it wasn't until I went to live in Canada and the United States that I became cognizant of the fact that decisions were made purely on the color of my skin, because that didn't happen in Jamaica. So here's the difference. I'm brought up in Jamaica by two parents, a picket fence, yada, 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 who tell you, you know, go to school, study your book, do unto others as you have them do unto you, et cetera, et cetera. And then I arrive in America at 16. The African-American child, from the minute he comes out of his or her mother's womb, is being told, now, remember, you Black. You got to do this better. If you're a Black boy, you got to do this. You can't wear a hoodie. Don't walk down the street if the police stop you. I mean, that shit is being programmed from then, you know? So when we ask, and as we know, who we are as adults today is essentially formed between the ages of about 7 and 18 years old. So there's a whole pile of unlearning that needs to take place, and it ain't pretty. We have to be willing and courageous to go in and do that inner work. I do feel there are people doing this work. The mere fact that you and I are having this conversation is a part of it. I have recognized, Leah, that I have to kind of open up my mouth some more. 20-odd years of being in the UN, I'm the quintessential diplomat. I can tell you to go screw yourself without you even realizing that's what I've told you. But that's not going to work in this time and space. Those of us who have a karmic responsibility and a divine duty, we got to step up if we want to make a difference in the world in which we're living.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask you something quite controversial. What are your thoughts on the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in the United States, and how one or both of those parties serve or don't serve the Black community?
I don't think the question is terribly controversial, A, because I'm not American, and B, I don't have voting rights, but I am a conscious human being who is paying attention to what's happening. And I
don't. Which is part of the reason why I'm asking you, because you're not an American, so I think you can actually give an objective viewpoint.
Frankly, the issue across the world with all of these organizations and all of these systems is not even political. And I think when we oversimplify something like, you know, the fact that Biden has chosen Kamala Harris, and the fact that Kamala is of Jamaican extraction, and the fact that Kamala is a Black woman and all of that, we're oversimplifying the situation. The issues go far deeper than that. We can go back to when, what's his face, pardon my disrespect, chose Sarah Palin. I mean, how dare you? Do you think by virtue of aligning with a woman that alone is enough to get the vote? I think I do agree it is manipulation of the masses, but that's the nature of politics. Until you start to sit down and question and really inquire, yeah, people can sell you all kind of foolishness. You know, it's like, and I'm going off, but I'm coming in. It's even with this pandemic that we're in. If you've been paying attention, this has been building and building and building. It's no surprise, but you have to be paying attention. So what has happened is that we've given our responsibility to our politicians, to our celebrities in America, to all of these people, instead of self-accountability and self-responsibility. You know, the current president of the United States, that everyone is so, oh my God, this, how the fuck did he get here? Somebody must have put him in. And he has the support. And being the non-American observer, I wouldn't be surprised to see him right back where he's living in the upcoming election. And we've got to hold our politicians accountable, like seriously accountable. I don't know if you and I spoke about this years ago when I did Landmark Forum. I remember one of the things that always stuck with me from that, there was my forum leader, I think, had run one of the first forums in Ireland, and this was the days of the IRA, etc. And he said it blew his mind that when the people were done with the forum, they went to their government And they go, hang on a sec, what the hell is happening? So we have to rise up, more rising up, instead of this bitching and this masturbating on social media about this person or that. That's my feeling on it, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, I just, to me, it's exactly what you said. The issue actually isn't political. Both sides are manipulating. Like, there is no, the Democrats versus Republicans, like, it's all manipulation. It is all divisiveness. It is all keeping all people showing up and being what they've been bred essentially to be, which is compliant commodities. Boom. And they keep us commodities by keeping us divided. And so both of those political parties serve an agenda, which is keep making money for the global financial agenda and the global financial elite.
Yeah.
Where do we want to go next?
Wow.
That was a lot in a short amount of time.
Yeah, we have touched on, wow, we've dove into some really big pieces. Where do we want to go next? I would love to perhaps touch on a bit about women in leadership and this emerging forefront that we're seeing across the globe, and what does that mean, and why do we think this is happening? I don't know who's asking who the question at this point.
Well, you riff on it a little bit.
Like everything else, this has been building for quite some time. Coming from my background, my former professional background, a very masculine type upbringing, as it were, and this actually ties in beautiful with the overall, and having a mother who left when I was 13, I had to develop my trust of women, because, you know, in the corporate arena, I met women that felt that they needed to become like men, competitive, cutthroat, and wannabes. So yeah, it took me some time to develop a really love of the feminine and of women. I mean, anybody, a child, particularly a woman that gets abandoned by her mother, that sends huge messages around self-worth and self-love. In my mid-30s, I was blessed to meet some extraordinary women, one particular woman. I've always had friends who are considerably older than I am. And I think, again, that's a direct result of having the absent mother, as it were. But the real sort of aha moment for me would have been that march about 4 years ago, or whenever that march took place, where 2.9 million women across the world gathered. And it really made me sit up straight, because I'm from a country where the population is 2.5 million. So if I have every human being in Jamaica marching and then some, then we are a force to be reckoned with. You know, one of my former mentors, Kofi Annan, speaks about women holding up half the sky. And the reality is that we are the ones that are going to transform the world. It doesn't matter whether you're a plant or a human being, we are the ones that bring forth life. So we have a viable role to play. And just like the issue of race, there have been some women who have put themselves in the victim mode. I remember talking to one of my mentors, a white South African woman who was instrumental in the post-apartheid movement. And I remember saying to her, I don't want to share my voice because I don't want to be labeled identity as the angry Black woman. And she said to me, but why not? She says, you're angry, you're Black, and you're female. So what then comes is the interpretation that I have had of that running in my trajectory for so long that has had stopped me from stepping into my power. And one thing we certainly know, there is not a movement on this planet. There is no transformation that is not ignited as a result of some injustice or anger. The real power is, how do I catalyze that and channel that so that a paradigm shift does indeed take place? So, you know, as sisters, as we gather and as we really start to see each other and support each other and claim our sovereignty, our rightful place at the table, We are the leaders. It's unapologetic, you know, and we've kind of always been. But again, we had bought into all of these systems, which are now crumbling around us. The world is scrambling for something else. And they recognize the way women go about doing things is the way forward. It seems to be working. In the pandemic alone, the countries that have done well have been led by women. Forbes magazine, top five economists in the world today are women. We're stepping up to the plate. So yeah, I think the new world order is in our hands, hearts, and wombs.
Well, that's a new world order I can actually get behind, as opposed to the one I think that's trying to be pushed on us.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying this episode of the Wealth Witch podcast. I wanted to take a quick break to talk to you about an amazing offer I have to work with me like my high-end clients do for a fraction of the investment. If there's anything that the last several months of chaos and change has showed us, it's that our perceptions of what is safe, stable, and secure is anything but. You are your guarantee. You are the key to unlocking and calling in the wealth that you desire. If you don't already know, I'm all about belief and intention. And for me, deciding is the most important action you can take. So I don't need to convince you. You'll either resonate with this or not. The only prerequisite that you need to have is a desire to change your current financial reality. This mastermind I'm about to tell you about is about empowering you to take back control of your financial destiny and take action towards creating the life that you deeply desire. The Wealth Alchemy Mastermind is hosted via the Telegram app, and I've set it up in a way that it's accessible. This is an incredible opportunity to work with me in this mastermind at a special pre-launch rate of $44 a month. Yes, you heard that right, just $44 a month to work with me at the same level that some of my high-end clients do. So what do you get? Weekly exclusive content and training, a monthly Zoom coaching call, a monthly Q&A session, wealth paradigm downloads, wealth activations, and a mastermind chat full of like-minded community. You aren't doing this mastermind for the content. You're doing it for the transmissions, period. You will be activated with abundance just by being in this container. But you have to act fast. The pre-launch offer is only available for a limited time, so click the link in the description of the podcast and sign up now. I'd love for you to join me, so do the thing. Now back to the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, for me, the challenge is that we don't trust each other. And again, we don't trust each other because we've been programmed and conditioned to not trust each other. Because when women come together collectively, we are unstoppable. That's not something that can be encouraged because it doesn't serve the people that are currently in power. So we have to, again, it's this wake-up call. It's this wake-up call of we are being controlled and manipulated every moment of every day. And whether it's an issue of male or female, or it's an issue of black or white, it's all a manipulation. And yep. So for me, it's that we have to begin to trust each other, and we have to begin to stop looking at color and race and come together as a collective. And so this is where I get a lot of backlash because, you know, people will say to me, well, you don't understand what it's like to be a Black American because you're basically white because of your privilege, because of this, because of that. You don't understand what it's like to be a woman of color, so you can't speak on it. And when you begin to talk about unity and you begin to talk about this divisiveness, we don't rise. None of us rise. If we're talking about America, we just continue to stay in the same place we've been for the last 400 years. If we don't come together, if we don't deconstruct this programming, if we don't deconstruct this conditioning, if we don't begin to look at each other as human beings, nothing changes. We just keep repeating history over and over and over because that divisiveness, that manipulation and allowing that to control us, we're still slaves. So for women, I feel like there's this piece of stop distrusting each other because you've been raised to distrust each other. when we come together, when we look to serve the collective, meaning all beings on this planet, regardless of race, creed, color, nationality, sexual persuasion, like when we just come together as women, that's when we rise. And we do have an incredible opportunity right now because the patriarchy isn't working. And I think we all have an awareness around that. But it starts with stopping the crab bucket mentality. It starts with stopping pulling each other down. We have to begin to elevate each other. We have to begin to empower each other. We have to begin to lift each other up, even if that means we don't get there first. And I think that there is another piece of this that's really important, which is we shouldn't vote for Joe Biden because he put a woman on his ticket that is of color. That's not what I mean by empowering each other. Like that again is a program. We're now being manipulated again. So it starts in our communities, not at a political level. It starts with your neighbor. You know, and if you're going to go into the political arena, start at your local levels of government, finding candidates, sponsoring candidates. So that's my little mini rant on that.
No, it's not a rant at all. I mean, there's so much that you've said there that really resonates for me. One of the things I say, you talk about it starts with our communities and our neighbor. It starts at your dining table. You know, we have people where family members aren't speaking to family members or haven't spoken to them for ages, but then we're outside, you know, lecturing and judging others and pointing fingers and then going to church on Sunday and praying about it. It starts at our dining table. And there's a certain amount of inner work that we have to do. You know, Bob Marley says, open your eyes and look within. Are you satisfied with the life you're living? And really look at yourself. You know, one of the things that I have often spoken about, Leah, is any discussion around gender that does not include the issue of ethnicity is an incomplete discussion. And I remember having a discussion. In fact, I had a chat with a woman just last week about this, who is about to launch this extraordinary project, a Norwegian woman looking at women, arts, and power. And she's starting with the story of women in the South. The art is extraordinary. And her feeling is that she's shy to go out and talk about this because she does not feel as a white woman that she has a right to have this conversation. And I said to her, that's really interesting, because I remember having a discussion, a very animated discussion with one of my dear friends in New York a few years ago. She is a Jewish Jamaican, and the discussion was that to shift the issue of race will require more whites to step into the conversation and be a stand. And my sort of fiery self was, well, screw that. I don't need anybody to stand up for me and yada, 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 yada. 2 years later, I have to say, I understood what it was that she was saying. And so one of the ways that we shift a dialogue, if we're really about women and sisterhood and what we're talking about, is that our privileged white sisters need to step up to the plate, because that's what privilege is about. Privilege means that you are in a position to act. So it is not enough for you to tell me that you didn't see it, or that it, you didn't know, or you had no idea, and talk about white fragility. It's crap. You know, the same way that I can say, having been an educated Black woman, for me to just turn my eye and go about my business and goes, this has jack to do with me, is not okay. And so when you and I have a conversation as we're having today, we are impacting women across the board because we see each other first as women. You have held a safe space for me to speak, and I have held a safe space for you, and both of us might be uncomfortable AF, but there is enough love in the dialogue that allows us to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yes, I completely agree that all women need to step up and have the conversations, the hard conversations around race. And women of color, BIPOC, Black women, African American women, the shaming has to stop. We have to stop getting in the way of our white sisters from speaking out. There are so many women I know that would love to get involved in this movement who have very powerful platforms that are terrified because if they say one thing that's perceived as wrong, they get butchered and they get torn down. And so there is a piece on both sides that really needs to be addressed and looked at.
And you know what that is? And this is, I feel, and I say this, there is work that Black people need to do amongst Black people, and there is work that white people need to do amongst white people. And once we've done our respective work, then we can start to come together with each other. And it's not going to be peaches and cream. It is going to be messy. You know, shame, the base of any shame is fear. You know, so look at what you've done to me. I'm going to shame your ass because that's the only sordid power I supposedly have. I sat on a call a few weeks ago. There's an extraordinary sister here, dear friend of mine, Sfadi Martin. She runs these truth and reconciliation calls every Saturday night. And there was one particular Saturday where the son of Stokely Carmichael, like serious Black intellectuals were on the call. And whatever the topic was, there was a white woman who is a client of mine who came on that call. And I saw where she was about to be ripped apart. But you know what was really beautiful? She stood in her power and she didn't back down on whatever the point was. And then what I did was that I came in and I held her hand on that call because I've been working with this woman long enough to know what it took her to really, I think she was talking about, you know, how does she go into her communities and have this conversation without getting shut down? So she's trying to make a genuine effort. She's come to me, to us, to ask this question, and then we want to shoot her down. Of course, she's going to go, well, screw this. So I get it. I get it. And I think the blessing of this time is that actually for the first time, certainly in my lifetime, with everything being stripped away, we're at home, we're locked away, we're scared for one reason or another. This is the first real opportunity that we have to shift this. And my prayer is that we don't screw it up because
yeah, we can. Absolutely. So I want to hear more on what you think this work that Black people need to do with Black people and white people need to do with white people is. But there's one other thing that I want to talk about that every time I see this, I feel so sad. And that is when women of color, Black people of color, BIPOC, tell white people that are attempting to learn or attempting to make a stand, be quiet. Now is not the time for you to talk. Now is the time for you to listen. You just be quiet.
And so your question is, how do I feel about that?
Well, that's a statement that I wanted to make because I think it's another huge issue to progress in general is the silencing because it's not working. And I agree with you that in order for things to shift, more white people have to get involved. But they can't get involved if Black people are continually telling them to be quiet and listen. So I guess that brings us to this next part. So how do we begin this work? How do Black people begin doing the work that they need to do with each other? How do white people begin doing the work that they need to do with each other so that we can come together and shift this? Like, how does it start? How does it begin? What do we do?
I think, as I said earlier, it starts at the dining table, going home and having some uncomfortable conversations at home. How did this happen? You know, I've had so many friends talk to me about the fact that when they were little children and they had this one Black friend, but they could never go home with the Black, you know, to go home and ask at the table, what was that really about? Honestly, that was not my reality. You know, in fact, I would probably say I had a reverse reality that whenever I brought home friends or partners who happened to have been white, particularly as I lived abroad and studied and traveled, and I would bring home my friends, my parents would roll out the red carpet for these people. Not necessarily because they were white, but because of Jamaican pride. We want everybody to love Jamaica and feel that Jamaica is the greatest country on earth. So when you're rolling, that's how we roll, you know? But I really feel, I don't know if there's a clear recipe or a clear-cut answer, but we have to dare to get uncomfortable. It's as simple as that. If we're not willing to get uncomfortable, then we're just going to keep spinning the same old. And we're going to make some mistakes. We're going to piss some people off. There are some people that will probably never, ever speak to us again. And that's fine. You can't please all the people all the time, you know? And a lot of this people pleasing that I check myself on it. It's like, oh my God, who the hell have I been? The amount of people that have said to me throughout my life, and I'm finally getting it, oh Nadine, you know, you have a voice, you need to do this, why haven't you? I didn't want to make any waves, and I didn't want to upset anybody, and I didn't want anybody to not like me. Everybody wants to be liked and loved. At 50, I couldn't give a rat's ass, because those who love me unapologetically. Because I love myself unapologetically. So the work really and truly has to begin within ourselves. We have to start forgiving ourselves, and we have to start getting uncomfortable with ourselves. It really is as simple as that. And as I said, you know, I remember my father died a couple of years ago, but I remember one day we were watching television in Jamaica, and Fox News or whatever, something came on the news about a child who was being bullied in school. And my father at this point must have been about 80 years old. And I watched him morph into this little boy and tell me about the boy next door who used to put mud in his boots. As a child, this is an 80-year-old man speaking to me about something that happened to him when he was 10. And I went, oh, wow. You know, so shedding the layers and shedding the layers. I don't know anyone on this planet, including myself, where I shed a layer and it was the wrong thing to do, if it was really the layer to be shed. Courage.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. We have to have courage. We have to have courage to have the uncomfortable conversations. We have to have courage to step outside of those very, very normal. I mean, when we talk about like what we're carrying ancestrally, of course we want everyone to like us, because we've been conditioned to assimilate. Because if you didn't assimilate, and if you weren't liked by the tribe, you got kicked out of the tribe and you died. So we're fighting something that is very much in our fight, freeze way of being. It is our survival instincts to get along. It is our survival instinct to be liked. And so it requires a tremendous amount of work to be able to step out of that. You know, it's getting to that point of no fucks given it's a long road. And it's something that we have to continue to work at, I think. And it's having the courage to do that. And I absolutely agree that those dinner table conversations are so important. And doing our own work is so important. And for me, that's questioning everything. Anything.
Especially
and everything.
Your beliefs.
Yeah, everything and anything I have been taught to believe was true. Regardless of whether it came from mother, father, pastor, teacher, asking myself on a daily basis, if this wasn't true, if this was a lie, who would benefit from me believing this lie?
Boom. And that's the self-inquiry. And when you start to live your life from that place, you start to sharpen your intuition and you have a deeper inner standing of what is happening around you. So people can't just give you Kool-Aid that you drink without going, hang on a minute, do I even like Kool-Aid? Yeah, that's a powerful piece of the puzzle. Yeah. And actually, Leo, that is where it begins. Questioning everything, especially your beliefs. Everything that we've been told. Everything. What would happen if we looked at this from a different perspective? This is what inversions teach you in the practice of yoga. Look at life from a different perspective.
So this has been amazing. I think we could go on for hours, but this was a great beginning. I will have you back for sure to be continued. But you have an incredible program that is starting, and I believe it's called Passion, Purpose, Prosperity, Power. I would love for you to tell us a little bit about it. We're definitely going to drop a link for it in the description of the podcast, as well as all the places that you can follow Nadine on the socials and on the interwebs. But tell us a little bit about this program.
Thank you for mentioning the program. Well, in our world, it's the 9th of the 9th, September 9th. 9 is the number of completion. And as I often say to my clients, your new year begins now. In the final quarter of the current year, you really want to start to unpack where you're headed for the new year. So this program is essentially designed to support us to create a roadmap as we move towards 2021. So each week that we meet, we start on September 19th. That's the first Saturday. And then the following Saturday, and then it's every other Saturday after that. We then wrap on the 24th of October. And each Saturday, we focus on one particular topic. We're on a Zoom call for 2.5 hours. I will have some of my mentors and inspirational people coming on to speak on a couple of those days. I'm super honored that Leia has said yes to come and speak about prosperity, because there's no one I know nowadays who blows shit up like that and is just so unapologetic. So thank you. So she'll be coming in to talk on the prosperity piece, and I might even ask her to come and give us a kiss on the power piece. Yeah, so that's the program. So we have these Zoom calls, 2.5 hours. In between those, you have assignments. I have one email communication with you. At the end of that, you come out with some clarity about where you're heading and a way in which to do it. Many of us come into these programs and these trainings, and we come out sort of like transformation junkies, and then we crash because we actually don't have a framework to operate from. Huge part of the program is to be aligned with an accountability buddy so that you become champions for each other's cause. Something really powerful happens when someone takes a stand for you. And interestingly enough, those who hardly know us take greater stands for us than people that have known us forever. And what's even more beautiful is that as you complete this, you have formed an ally and you have no idea what's possible from that point forward. So that's a program, super affordable. It's at $579 US for the entire program. And Leah will share with you where you can find out more on that. It's on my website, universalempress.com, all one word. And I'm on the same on Instagram, universalempress.com, Facebook, universalempress.com.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm so excited to come and contribute and happy to as much as you would like me there. I know it's going to be such a powerful container. So definitely check out the link below in the description of the podcast for more on that. Nadine, it's been an absolute pleasure. We need to get together soon.
Please.
let's definitely do that. Thank you for this powerful conversation. It's so needed, and more conversations like this are needed. And I hope that, you know, my hope from this episode would be that women take away from this that they can step out and begin to have these uncomfortable conversations, and that it's okay to make people uncomfortable. It's okay to make yourself uncomfortable. And that's actually the space that we grow from, is those places of discomfort. So thank you. Until next time, this is Leah Steele, the Wealth Witch, signing off.
That's a wrap. Thank you for joining me. Remember, wealth is a mindset, and you absolutely deserve to live the life you deeply desire. And with belief and intention, you create your reality. Until next time, this is Leah Steele, the Wealth Witch.